Welcome to Chapels from Rosedale Bible College. Thanks for joining our community for weekly chapels recorded on our campus in Rosedale, Ohio. We hope you are challenged and inspired by what you hear. Enjoy.
I hate being treated unfairly. I'm sure you guys have probably experienced that before. When I was in India, it happened all the time. In fact, there's just to give you one of many examples. I remember going to the border of Delhi one time and needing to get an auto rickshaw, which is basically like a little mini three-wheeled taxi. And they must have seen me coming. There's like probably 10 to 15 auto drivers there waiting to give rides. So I thought, oh, surely I'm going to get someone who's going to give me a good price. And I knew that the route I was going to take was only going to cost about 40 to 50 rupees, and yet all of them were in cahoots with one another, no less than 120 rupees. That was the lowest they would go. And they're required by law of Delhi to actually go by the meter rate, which would be like somewhere around 40-some rupees. I knew that in my head, and they were lying to my face, refusing to give me a ride for anything less than 120. I could have reported them to police. I was so frustrated with these guys. It's like, do I give them way more than they should be getting, or do I walk another 5-10 minutes down the road to find some honest auto driver, or do I report them to the police? I mean, I was so mad. And I'm sure you guys have probably experienced similar kind of situations where you just feel so ripped off and cheated. It just feels gross. It feels frustrating. Don't know how to handle it. And if you know that feeling, you can identify with the guy in our story for today. He got ripped off, and in fact, much worse way. By his brother, no less. His brother, we don't know the details of the story, but apparently he was in some kind of a situation where maybe his parents died and now there was this inheritance to be divided up. And apparently his brother was supposed to divide this up and give him a share, and he didn't get it. In fact, I might need you guys to help me over the slide. Oh, yeah, that went too far. There we go. So he actually did the right thing here. He didn't just bring this to a civil trial or something. He came to Jesus. That's a good advice, right? He went to Jesus. So someone in the crowd shows up. Verse 13, someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." I mean, just imagine if your sibling, your parents died, and your sibling, who's supposed to divide up everything that your parents owned among your siblings, said, "No, I'm keeping it all for myself." How would you feel? Be pretty outraged? Extremely outraged? Would you take matters into your own hands? Would you go to Jesus in prayer? I mean, this guy went to Jesus. That's pretty good. Now, Jesus' response is pretty strange in some ways. In fact, pretty troubling in other ways. He doesn't really show this man any sympathy, even though it seems like he's been horribly wronged. In fact, he doesn't even say anything harsh about that brother who's ripping him off. In fact, the only thing he has to say is actually a warning, almost a rebuke, towards this man himself. So there's something disturbing here that as you look through this story, what you'll find is that our hearts and our experience tell us that everything that this man is complaining about and experiencing, like, he's right. He seems to be spot on, and yet Jesus is against this guy. And in our minds, we know everything Jesus says is true. And so where's the disconnect? Why is it that our hearts tell us this man is true, and yet we know Jesus has to be the one who's actually true? Well, look at verse 14 with me. Jesus replies here, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter between you?" Okay, so this may be is this a cop-out, like Jesus doesn't want to get into it? Or I mean, when you think about it, Jesus is going to be the judge of all, right? He told stories of how at the end of time, when the Son of Man returns with all the angels, like Matthew 25, that he's going to sit on the throne, separate the sheep from the goats, and bring the final judgment. I mean, if anyone is qualified to judge, it's Jesus, the ultimate judge, who's going to bring complete judgment one day, right? I mean, what's wrong about this guy bringing this case to Jesus? Isn't that the right person to bring it to? Jesus continues on, and here's where we get some of his confrontation here. Jesus says to him, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because life does not consist of an abundance of possessions." Now, wait a second. Was this guy really greedy? I mean, think about it. He was asking for what he deserved. This inheritance was supposed to be divided up. He wasn't trying to get something he didn't deserve. Isn't that greed, wanting what you don't have, what isn't yours? He just wanted rightfully justice. He wanted what was his. Shouldn't Jesus be on the side of justice? Why does he give the warning to this guy? Well, you know, when I was even in India, like when I got ripped off by these auto drivers, it was like, it would be like if God was looking at me and say, Jeff, stop it. Stop being greedy. And I'd be like, wait, they're the ones sinning, Jesus. They're the ones who are trying to rip me off. They're in the wrong. I'm just wanting justice. Don't you want justice too? So where's Jesus going with this? Well, he actually goes on to tell us a parable to explain this further. It says here in verse 16 and following, and he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. So then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. That's great, right? I mean, aren't we supposed to save up for retirement? In fact, if you don't do what this guy says, if you have surplus and you don't save it up for retirement so that you can eventually retire, won't people think that you're in the wrong and acting with foolishness? And yet Jesus in this passage is going to say that this man in the parable is the fool. But God said to him, you fool! This very night your life will be demanded from you. So what do we take from this? Is Jesus saying it's wrong to save for retirement? You shouldn't save up? You should risk being dependent on others? I mean, the Bible tells us to make sure we take care work so we have something for ourselves as well as enough extra to give to others. Like, why would he be condemning this as a foolish thing? In fact, even take it one step farther. Do you recognize those words, eat, drink, and be merry? How about here, Ecclesiastes 8:15. This is one of the things that keeps getting emphasized in the book of Ecclesiastes, in that there's nothing better under the sun than for people to eat, drink, and be merry. It says here in verse 15, so I commend, this is the teacher of wisdom in Ecclesiastes, so I commend the enjoyment of life because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Now, if you look at the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, you'll find that those three words, eat, drink, and be glad or be merry, are the same three Greek words in both Ecclesiastes as what they are here in Luke. In one, they're imperatives, the other infinitives, but it's the same three words in the same order. I don't think that's a complete coincidence. But that leaves us, again, a little troubled. Because this man that Jesus is confronting, who is ripped off, as well as the man that's being described in this parable that Jesus is telling, both of those men are actually acting with wisdom, saving up for the future, eating, drinking, being merry, enjoying life while it lasts, just as the teacher in Ecclesiastes instructs us to. They're wanting justice, which is a good biblical thing. So why then is Jesus coming so harsh against this guy who's acting with great wisdom? Well, if you look at this closer again, verse 15, there's nothing better for a person under the sun. In Ecclesiastes, it looks at things under the sun. I think the clue to understanding where this disconnect is between Jesus and the man is that Jesus is not looking at things from the perspective of under the sun. He's looking above the sun. He's looking at the heavenly, eternal realities. In fact, I'm going to take you back through this passage, and what I want you to see is that when you look at life from an eternal perspective, every single thing that Jesus says in this passage absolutely 100% makes sense. Let's go back through this from the beginning. Someone in the crowd called out to Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now think about it. The inheritance, does that have any eternal value? It's a temporary thing. He'll have it for the rest of his life in this world, and then it's gone. And if you think about it, from the perspective of eternity, No matter how long you live in this world, your life in this world is infinitely small in comparison with the length of time that eternity takes up. Infinitely small, infinitely insignificant compared to eternity. So the inheritance itself is not an eternal matter. But perhaps the guy's response to this matter is an eternal matter. His character, his heart attitude, the anger, separation from God, or his greed, his longing for and focus on earthly things is something that can have eternal consequences. And so notice how Jesus takes that straight on. He says, man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter between you? Again, Jesus is a judge, as we talked about. He will come back to judge the world one day, but he's going to judge people's hearts. He will judge their minds. He will judge based on these eternal things. He's not going to judge based on who gets these possessions or those possessions in this world. That's not what he came to judge. He came to judge our hearts, our minds, our souls, our character, who we are, whether we're connected with him or reject him or our attitudes. That's what gets, that's what has eternal consequences. And so in this misunderstanding or this almost like they're on two different wavelengths, this man is focused on the things of this world, wanting justice, which on one hand seems good, but Jesus is trying to redirect him that, like, buddy, here, your heart matters more. Your attitude, your response to this situation matters more. Look, I'm not going to judge this. This is not what I'm here for. But rather, watch out. Verse 15, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because life, true life, does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Those possessions are temporary, worthless. But your heart, your greed, your attitude, your response, that can have eternal consequences. So be on your guard against all kinds of greed and realize life isn't on these eternal or on these temporary earthly things. No, what is life? True life is in Jesus. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, according to John. He's the resurrection and the life. He is, as Paul talks about in Colossians, which is you're taking biblet or learn about either last class or today's class, Christ is your life. You die with Christ. You're raised with Christ. You will be glorified with Christ one day. Or as Philippians in our last lecture in biblet, I'm crucified with Christ, as Paul, and so it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Christ is true life. True life is found only in Christ's kingdom. And the stuff of this world, that's not life. It's what the world wants us to think is life, but that's not life. It's temporary. It doesn't last. Life lasts. True life is eternal. The stuff of this world is very temporary, very fleeting in comparison. So, Jesus goes on, and in this parable, he says, the ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. So then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store up my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Again, good advice from the perspective of this world, if this is all that's worth living for. But from an eternal perspective, notice Jesus' conclusion here. But God said to him, you fool! This very night your life will be demanded from you, and then who's going to get what you have prepared? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. He was a fool because he was storing up temporary things instead of what was eternal. That's dumb. Why would you trade what is eternal and ignore what's eternal in order to get something so temporary? Be like if I offer you a cookie now, or if you wait a few hours, I'll give you a brand new house, all yours for free. Like, okay, would any of you take the cookie right now? I hope not. So, if we really believe what Jesus says here, it will drastically change our lives. And that's why Jesus really here, he's telling us to act in faith, to watch out for all forms of greed. And again, this greed can be very deceptive. What this man is seeking seems fair. The world tells us this is justice that he's seeking. That doesn't seem like greed, but it is a type of greed when we're longing for these temporary things that ultimately aren't even ours. Everything belongs to God. And so even for this man to seek what was his due, it's like he's missing the bigger point. There's something much greater to be seeking. And so again, from a worldly perspective, everything that the man in the crowd and the man in the parable are doing makes good sense. But from an eternal perspective, it is complete foolishness. And that is why Jesus tells us to watch out for all forms of greed, but rather be rich toward God. Now you'll notice the passage right after this passage actually goes on to expand on this same idea. So I would not be doing justice to this passage if I don't tell you this next passage too. So continues on in the next verses. It says, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear.'" And then he goes on to give a description of like birds and how God cares for the birds and they don't have to worry. And then he talks about the flowers and how they don't have to work for it, and yet God cares for them. And so is he not going to care for you guys so much more? So he says, "For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them, but seek his kingdom, and these things, your clothes, food, the things of this world that you need, they will be given to you as well. So do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." He's pleased to give you what is eternal. "So sell your possessions, give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near, where no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I think these stories go hand in hand for a reason. Luke put these together because they're telling the same reality, that the stuff of this world is not worth worrying about. It's not worth focusing on, because we have something of such greater value, which is the kingdom of God, these eternal rewards, these eternal treasures that we can store up. And so even back when I was dealing with those auto rickshaw drivers, I was mad that they were just blatantly ripping me off. And similar to this man in the story, I felt God's conviction in that God was even revealing to me at that time, like, "Jeff, why are you so angry at losing maybe 70, 80 rupees, which would be like maybe a couple dollars? Why are you so bent out of shape about $2 at the cost of acting like me? At the cost of living like a Christian, of being a witness to these Hindus and Muslims that don't know me? Which is of more value?" And I felt so convicted in that. And I tried the rest of the time that I was there to be very cognizant of that, in that I had an opportunity to be a witness to these people. Jesus himself was badly mistreated. He was ripped off. He was mocked, though he is God. He was beaten. He was crucified. I haven't experienced anything to that extent. And so it's an opportunity for me to have people cheat me, and for me to be able to show love and respect back to these people who are mistreating me and using me. That's an opportunity to show the gospel to these people who don't know it. And I was trading that in to instead have anger and rage about losing out on a couple bucks. We need to keep an eternal perspective. It's just not worth it. We've got to watch out for all kinds of greed, but be rich toward God. In fact, one example I think of is somebody who did a great job with this, John Wesley, who one of the founders of the Methodist Church. When he first was getting started early on in ministry, he only made about 30 British pounds in a year. Now, back in those days, yeah, that still wasn't much. Nowadays, you could not live off of that much. But he calculated he was able to live off of as little as 28 pounds per year. That was the minimum he could get by on. But then So he couldn't quite give a tithe at the start of his ministry, but he was able to give that other two British pounds to God. By the next year, he was earned 60 British pounds in a year. He continued to live off of only 28, which was the minimum he felt he could get by on, and then gave the other 32 to the Lord. He continued for many years to just live on 28 British pounds per year, giving the rest that he got to the Lord. And even by later on in his life, when his ministry was really taking off, he was getting lots and lots of money. In fact, later on, there were years he was making well over 1,000 British pounds per year, which back in those days was a lot of money. And yet he was still living on only about, 30 British pounds. Due to inflation, he had to spend a little bit more on himself. But still, 30 British pounds on himself, giving the rest, well over 1,000, for the ministry of the Lord to build up God's kingdom. He got it. He understood what Jesus is teaching in this passage. He understood that the only money you keep is the money you give away. In fact, spending money on God's kingdom, being rich toward God, is an investment opportunity that is out of this world, literally. It is so out of this world. It is eternal. It's an eternal investment opportunity that we would be fools not to take advantage of. And so every dollar you spend on yourself, it's not necessarily evil to spend money on yourself, but every dollar you spend on yourself is a wasted opportunity, because that's a dollar you can't spend on earning eternal treasures in heaven. And it's not confined just to our money. We can be rich towards God in a lot of ways, through our time, through the ways that we live our lives. But the teachings Jesus has here, I think, it takes faith, because if you don't really believe he's got this eternal inheritance, if you don't really believe that he's going to reward you for what you do in this world, you're not going to live that way. But are you willing to step out in faith? The faith to trust that the eternal realities are true, that what is unseen is more real, more eternal, more lasting than all the things you can see with your eyes. Will you trust him and watch out for all forms of greed? And will you be rich toward God? In fact, as we close today, I want you to just take a moment before you leave the chapel to just sit and think, what are you going to do to be rich toward God?
Father God, we thank you that you have been rich towards us, Lord, and I pray that you would convict us and place in our hearts where we need to be rich towards you, how we can be rich towards you, Lord.
Thanks for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please share so others can benefit from it as well. And be sure to check out our other podcasts at rosedale.edu/podcasts.